Hello and welcome to Monocle on Culture. I'm Robert Bound. Now, Icelandic singer Björk is a household name. Climate-conscious culture vultures know art star Ólafur Eliasson too. But what is Icelandic art about at its rugged source? And how have Iceland's impressively low COVID-19 numbers affected art and artists there? Except for short early lockdowns in 2020, Iceland's museums have stayed open. Recent events saw artists and viewers gathering in small numbers in galleries, the Reykjavik Art Museum, and even a backyard. Monocle's Berlin correspondent, Kimberly Bradley, managed to visit the icy nation and after 5 days of strict quarantine was free to search for answers. She'll be joining me on the programme today to talk about her trip, how Iceland has been keeping its art industry alive during the pandemic, and what the past year has done for Icelandic artists. Kimberly, welcome to the programme. Now you're fresh back from Iceland. What was the vibe there?
The vibe, the first 5 days I was in solitary confinement in a very nice apartment with a view. It's cold, it's empty and not empty. This is probably the best way to describe it. The city of Reykjavik, when it's full, it's actually full of tourists, I was told. And there are plenty of locals milling about. The cafes are full. I mean, that visually to me was kind of amazing to see. But there's an excitement that's still there because events are still happening and people really go to them. People even will stand outside to wait to become one of those 20 people allowed in. So it was a really kind of nice environment, loose, but not full. And there are a few reasons for that. It was also the dead of winter. So, it's not like there was a lot of reveling or anything on the streets.
Reykjavik's art scene, Iceland's art scene is young. The art museum was opened in 1973, but there obviously isn't an Icelandic tradition in the sense that there's a Renaissance and all the rest of it, like there are in many parts of Europe. Is there a sort of year zero idea of contemporary art and modern art in Iceland? Or do you feel like you're somewhere where new ideas have been had recently and are being had?
I learned a lot while I was there. I don't know if there's a year zero, but I heard a lot about the 60s period of conceptualism with Fluxus and performance. And there was suddenly from Iceland a lot of exchange with like the Germans or Joseph Beuys.
Yeah.
People like this. And Dieter Roth, the German kind of collage, bricolage performing dude who I don't know how well known he is outside of Germany, but he's known here. He lived there and was married to an Icelandic woman. And so there was a lot of exchange and inspiration from him for this performative, really conceptual stuff in the 60s. Before that, and this is a cliche that lingers, is this notion of landscape people, like because you've got crazy landscapes there. You have a landscape painter who's the namesake of part of the Reykjavik Art Museum. There are three locations. There's one that's just for modernism, Johannes Kjarval. And he painted every landscape, even the ones that I saw on my road trip, starting at the beginning of the 20th century. So there is a bit of that, but there is no Renaissance. There really weren't a lot of painters even when he was painting his landscapes. And there's still this idea that Icelandic artists are dealing with nature.
Yeah.
Which is kind of true. You can't get away from it there. But it's less that than you'd think.
And in terms of talking of politics, how involved is the government in the art scene? Like, is there a lot of state-funded art? Are they helpful? Are they a hindrance?
They're helpful. I don't know specific numbers. I never kind of got my hands on budget numbers, but I was privy to some really intriguing information about a thing called the artist's salary. So artists in Iceland can apply for grants. They're project-based. But for the period of the grant, they get an artist salary. So they get this like 1,500 euros a month or whatever that is in crowns, sometimes for a year. And they make their project. They also get project funding, I think, on top of this. But it's a salary. And I find that concept of salary really interesting. Like they're working and they're artists and they get paid like regular workers. It's like, oh, okay. And they, I do know that the new culture minister, it's a young woman, there's a young female prime minister in Iceland too, she hasn't been there for all that long, is very pro-visual art because Iceland actually has tended to fund literature more historically.
Really?
Yeah, and music to a certain degree too. And visual art has always been kind of a little bit forgotten. And it is growing. There are more artist-run spaces around Reykjavik, but even other smaller cities, towns, there are actually towns outside. I mean, in talking to some of the dealers, this is also commercial, that's not government funding. There have been things like the Marshall House, which is an old building on the harbor, that a group, one gallerist, Ólafur Eliasson, who actually lives in Berlin, he's Icelandic-Danish, and two artist-run spaces, good ones, big ones, managed to get the government to renovate this building and basically rent all these incredible industrial spaces to all of these people at a really low rate. So that's also government help. I mean, it's an amazing, it's been open less than 5 years and it's absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
So there is support. The dealers that I spoke to had very good years. In fact, IA8, which is probably the most visible gallery outside Iceland. I mean, they represent Kjartansson, they represent Ólafur Eliasson, and some of the really, the guys who are now in their 70s who've been painting since the 60s. They expected a horrible year, and they had the same kind of year they had before. Because local collectors really rallied. They bought young artists, they bought older artists, they bought expensive, they bought mid-list. And nobody was really left in the lurch.
Yeah, that's really interesting. We've talked around and about the houses. Kim, we're going to listen to your report now. This is Kimberly Bradley reporting from Iceland.
On a cold February night, after artist Hulda Ross Gudnadottir's exhibition at the Reykjavik Art Museum, viewers wandered downtown to watch artist Egil Sigbjörnsson make a live music video in a backyard. A crowd cheered him on before adjourning for beers in the adjacent record store. Adjourning for beers? This simple activity has not been possible anywhere else in Europe for a long while, nor has attending a museum opening. But Iceland, and Iceland's art scene, has handled the pandemic differently. Normally swamped with now absent tourists, art has turned to local audiences.
It's important for the community to be able to experience culture in times like this. The number of Icelandic visitors has risen, although we had 3 months of closure. We put a lot of effort into programming outside the museum, you know, using the web, using all kinds of mediums that we could bring visual arts to people without bringing them to our institution. We made exhibitions that were accessible through the windows of the museum. So we put a lot of effort into that, and I think we reached new audiences through these efforts.
That's Olaf Kristín Sigurðardóttir, director of the Reykjavik Art Museum. Even if openings could happen in groups limited to 20 people at a time, local museum going rose significantly in the past year. So did local art collecting, which was a surprise. Borkur Arnason of IA8 Gallery, which represents Icelandic artists like performance star Ragnar Kjartansson, explains.
Well, you know, people were stuck here, so a lot of our new clients, I guess, bored with their walls at home. We did shows and we just kept the program going. In the same year we thought we were going to go under, we did a great year.
Elin Hansdottir, an artist represented by I8 and known for immersive installations and sculptures, was also surprisingly busy.
I was just working on a set design for the National Theatre. We were very, very lucky. It was only a group of 10 people working together, so we, by law, were able to keep working, and everybody was very, very thankful for being able to work compared to the rest of the world and create something. The theater actually managed to open, and we premiered in January. So they're managing to, there is about 150 people for each show. And that's enough to keep it running.
Walking through Reykjavik Center, you can't help but notice that the streets are somewhat empty. Most tourist shops are closed. But cafes and restaurants are open, and art here is going strong, often through artists who normally travel extensively and exhibit outside the country, or outside the city.
My name is Bjarkey Ólafsdóttir. I am opening an exhibition called Róveras. The English title is The Dog Within. And the museum is called Listasafn Árnesinga, and it's in Hveragerði in Iceland.
Ólafsdóttir's sound piece of a snoring dog is part of a whimsical exhibition on view in a small town just outside Reykjavik, where artists and writers have long gathered and lived. Her show is based on dogs and the human tendency to repress their inner dog, so to speak. She has rethought her art production this year.
Going abroad has not been possible, but it has been actually good for my art making here in Iceland and giving me kind of time and space to produce art. And then also I decided to show art within Iceland. So I had two exhibitions in the east of Iceland last year, and I will take one exhibition to the west of Iceland, to a beautiful town called Ísafjörður, and then I'm showing here. So I'm focusing on showing internally within Iceland and enjoying that.
In the big picture, it's an optimistic time. Visual art is getting more support in a country more known for its literature. Astis Spano, a co-founder of Multis, a gallery that sells quirky multiple editions by Icelandic artists, explains.
Part of it is possibly also that the Icelandic government is more open to funding, open to assisting the Icelandic art scene, and therefore this opening to opportunities abroad.
Less than 5 years ago, an industrial building on the harbor, long abandoned and smelling of fish, was transformed. The Marshall House now contains an acclaimed restaurant, two artist-run galleries, and a showroom for large-scale works by art star Ólafur Eliasson. Across the harbor is Eliasson-designed Harpa, a glittering opera house and convention center. Artist-run spaces abound. Some of these things are not entirely uncontroversial, but there's an overall sense of openness, says gallerist Siggi Gunnarsdóttir. This differs from art scenes in Europe or America.
We don't have the same sense of, like, the history, art history on our shoulders, for sure. But I think also, this individuality. You know, we are individualistic culture, so we think really that we can essentially do what we want.
Art history is a extremely short thread in Iceland, shorter than in probably any place. We're not a very critical people. We don't do criticism well. In our education system, we're not really taught to give or take much criticism, which can be very annoying and frustrating, at least sometimes for us in the job that we do, but it's also extremely liberating, and there's a lot of people that grow up feeling completely convinced they can do anything. Yeah, it's a sort of a limitless kind of thing.
There is some critical political art happening alongside work dealing with nature, sweeping landscape painting being the Icelandic cliché. Hulda Ross Gudnadottir's exhibition is about the harbor's fishing industry and gentrification. And artist duo Libya Castro and Ólafur Ólafsson commissioned composers to write songs on each article of the new Icelandic constitution, an inclusive document drafted a decade ago by a citizen assembly and voted on by the nation in 2012, but still not ratified by parliament. In October 2020 at the Reykjavik Art Museum, these 114 songs were performed in a marathon socially distanced event. An exhibition is forthcoming for spring.
Proportionally, we're doing a lot here in the arts for a very, very small place. Does that make sense?
It certainly does. Art in Iceland packs a punch, even, or especially, in the middle of an exceptionally well-managed pandemic.
Thank you, Kim, for that report. Now, you mentioned at the top of it that you were at the opening of a new exhibition by the artist Hulda Ross Gunnadottir at the Reykjavik Art Museum. We're going to hear your conversation with her shortly. But first, can you sum up who she is and what her show, which is called Werk, Labour Move, is largely about?
She is an Icelandic artist who came into the arts a little bit late. She studied anthropology first.
It's good training.
And went to art school in, I think she was around 30 when she started. And she works mostly in film and does this interesting thing in which she straddles both the film world, fully film, like she makes documentaries in documentary style, and the art world, in which her filmic work is more like video art. It is video art. She moved to Berlin in 2008 on one of the Icelandic residential things and stuck around. She does spend quite a lot of time back in Iceland, especially for this particular body of work. She does long-term research. She noticed about a decade ago that the harbor in Reykjavik was gentrifying, like many harbors everywhere, but also noticed that there's labor going on there. There's old-fashioned work that has always had to do with global and local economies. So Iceland has a lot of fish around it, and there are fishing trawlers that come in, and there are men that have to unload them within 48 hours. And she started observing this and noticing, first of all, the incredible labor that goes into unloading manually tons and tons and tons of fish in boxes, 25 kilos per box, within 48 hours. And you know, who are these guys? Who are the companies that own the rights to the fishing? I mean, it's all incredibly complicated and too long for me to explain right here. But she did a documentary called Keep Frozen on this idea of this labor actually going on under the noses of Reykjavikers and they don't even notice. She noticed how aesthetic some of the movements were. They're like dancing. I mean, these, some of the guys too, they might be Polish immigrants or art students from Iceland that only do it for 2 years. You have to be very strong. There are very few lifetime dock workers because it's so hard on your body, but it's a good way to make money. And her documentary is very documentary style. It won awards. It was shown in documentary festivals all over the world. And she took that work and made it into a 48-hour, here's more durational performance for you, 48-hour performance in Leipzig, where some of these very same dock workers that are in the documentary came and became art performers and moved these boxes that were filled with not fish from one side of a huge exhibition hall to the other in 48 hours. And she filmed that, and the film that you're seeing at the Reykjavik Art Museum is a very stylized three-channel installation of that performance. It's gorgeous. It's as if she's abstracted it or put it up one meta level from all of this work that she's done before. So you walk into the exhibition space, she's got between 5,000 and 6,000 empty fish boxes. She also has a video that shows the museum employees putting together these fish boxes. So that's about labor in itself.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and there's another level.
And you've got this gorgeous three channels where you see the movements as if you're watching some sort of dance performance. And the soundtrack, she skips it every once in a while. It's almost like she's DJing their movements and the things that they say, swing, when they're moving a trolley of heavy boxes around, or just the thud of the boxes.
Yeah, and so it's a thing about the sort of choreography of manual labor, almost like the balletic possibilities of ordinary stuff, I suppose, maybe, and the sacrament, the ritual of work, of physical work, I suppose, which especially repetitive work, which takes on a you have a muscle memory for it. Sounds wonderful. Well, on that note, Kim, let's play this. Thank you so much for joining us on the program today, and let's finish things off by hearing your interview with Hulda Ross Gunnadottir.
I do operate in two different worlds, the film world and the contemporary art world. And I'm very fascinated by
the different dialogues, the different measurement of quality, different discourses, different way of distributing and financing. I'm usually the one who are the only one in each place that knows about these two worlds. And I wanted to investigate the relationship because in documentary, you are kind of expected to be documenting some kind of reality. The idea of the author as constructing reality is still not maybe very vivid in eyes of the public. But in a contemporary art world, it's given for granted that the author is constructing a reality. So it's a very different idea of the author. I had shot this documentary in 2014, and they had all been very generous in inviting me into their world at the doc, so I wanted to work more creatively with them as agents of their own creation. And so when I got this offer to exhibit in Leipzig in 2016, I offered them to come and make a performance, a 48-hour performance, do the same labor as on the docs. And it was our investigation together, what would happen if they were in one hall, moving boxes from one place to another, which has different movements than, you know, going from the lowest part of the boat and up to the dock. So there's an element of the performance in the art space, there's the element of their performance at their workplace, there's an element of the documentary and expectation to that, and then the fiction, like video installation, art form. And I see all of these things in a dialogue, and like it's posing questions about these different forms and the relationship.
Could you articulate what those questions are in your mind?
What is a documentary? I mean, how can it be? I mean, there is no objective reality. There is, you always choose what you're filming and how you edit it, and you put your own interpretation. I mean, the way you use the camera, the editing, it's total construction of reality. And now, after everything has been going on in the last few years, it's like this claim to truth. You know, it's a maybe not very beneficiary for us, actually creates more passive audiences that, you know, ready to... While on the other hand, you would take it for granted that there is an author, he is prominent, and this is a constructed reality, you know. It's more critical position to take on what you're seeing.
How did your opening work yesterday?
It was interesting with the opening. I haven't actually been going so much to COVID openings. And the limit was 20 people, so the museum had organized it into 3 time slots, where 20 people were invited in each time slot. And I'm used to much bigger openings with so much more people. It was nice. I could talk to every single one. It was nice, but it was also a bit strange to have so calm opening, you know. It worked good for the work because the installation was sound and so people could actually see the artwork, not only socialize, yeah. I mean, of course, it's wonderful. I mean, I haven't been, I think last time I went to a museum was in last summer in Paris. So, yeah.
Okay, for me personally, your opening was a colossal treat because I haven't been at an art opening in months and months either. So, and you realize how much you miss this. So kudos to Iceland for actually keeping these things open. Do you have any speculation on what might be next for visual arts in Iceland?
We used to have only one professional gallery that went to art fairs, I8. And then a couple more have opened recently. And one is Berg Contemporary, which actually has video artists like Woody and Steina Vasulka, and Sigur Guðjónsson, who's going to represent us in next Biennale, he's also a video artist. And they're opening up, they're building actually downtown, like a video exhibition space. I am part of a group, like we have organized ourselves together, visual artists who actually work with film, and we are trying to lobby for more funding so we can do experimental on terms of contemporary art. So I hope something comes out of that. I think there's an explosion in the number of artists because there's a lot of artists that come out of the art school every year. Always more and more artists. I mean, also recent development has been, there were two prominent different generation are open to their own space, artist run space. First was those conceptual guys in late 60s, they opened the Living Art Museum. And then Kling and Bang opened in early 2000s, yeah, like 2003, something like that. Generation of artists coming back from master's studies. And recently the city renovated this beautiful building, the Marshall House, and they went there. So it almost felt like these artist-run spaces have now become institutions. It's not cheap to run those places. So that is, you can see them, there's things maturing, you know. And there's also new generations have opened their own spaces in town. There's an old toilet is converted into art space. And there are other things. So, yeah, the future of Icelandic art scene, as we know, we don't know anything about the future, really.
That's true. But I've noticed just an energy that's not frantic. It's an inspiring energy that you did mention this before. It looks towards the future in a way that's a lot different from Berlin. It's less cynical. You've said that it's possibly not critical enough, you know, it's less critical. But I think it'll find the balance. I've been really, really pleased, inspired, made thoughtful. It's provoked certain thought processes in my brain that make me want to come back.
That's all for today's programme. How stirring to hear from a part of the world that's got its art industry up and running during the past year. And Hulda Ross Gudnadottir's exhibition is on at the Reykjavik Art Museum until early May. Monocle on Culture was produced by Holly Fisher, and we'll be back at the same time next week, so do join us then. But until then, from me, Robert Bound, thank you very much for tuning in.